Morning.
May I please reserve 3 minutes?
All right.
May it please the court, Richard Llewellyn Jones appearing on behalf of the appellants, Mr. and Mrs. Connor. We're sitting in the first row behind me. Before I start my comments, I would like to address the issue of the first appointment of successor trustee. I believe my pleadings were in error. I think it a genuine mistake on my part, but I don't want to let that go. In my pleadings, I suggested that the first appointment of successor trustee was issued by MERS. It was not. It was executed purportedly by Everhome Bank or Everhome. And my confusion comes from the fact that there was a second appointment of successor trustee found at CP 1012 and CP 1013 to Quality Loan. But I want to address the issue of confusion that would be created, obviously mine, but it also might be in terms of any other homeowner that would be involved in the foreclosure process. And I addressed the signator's involvement in this particular set of documents, the assignment of note and deed of trust by MERS and the two appointments of successor trustee. Both were signed by...
You said MERS signed the note?
Yes, I do, because in the comment, it says that it assigns the note, the deed of trust and the note that accompanied.
Right, but back in June of 2006, Irwin Mortgage endorsed the note in blank. Is that correct?
I don't know that for a fact.
Is that what the documents that were presented to the trial court show?
Purportedly, yes.
And that note then was delivered to Fannie Mae, according to the record.
That is an issue of fact. There was no documentation.
Have you raised any evidence, a genuine issue, material fact, with evidence that it was delivered to anyone other than Fannie Mae?
Well, I think that has the question exactly backwards because
well,
it is their burden.
Anyway?
There was no evidence to suggest that it was. It was merely an allegation based upon incompetent testimony.
All right. Assuming that we disagree with you about the admissibility of the declarations, is there any evidence that creates an issue of fact that Fannie Mae delivered the note to Everbank?
There was no evidence, no documents of assignment one way or the other. We have simply the testimony of the
claims. We have a declaration that says it was. Is there anything controverting that in the record?
Not to my knowledge.
All right. Now, the trustee that was... That reported the notice of trustee sale. That wasn't this Quality entity that you just described.
It isn't Quality Loan, no. Okay.
So
Regional Trustee Services.
Right. So where does that come in? And I mean, I don't – tell us a little bit more about that. I don't know.
Happy to do so. Mr. Wilkins is not an employee of MERS. He's not an employee of Evergreen. And he signed all of these documents. He's apparently an employee of LPS who submitted the documents to Regional Trustee Services. There's been no evidence whatsoever of Mr. Wilkins' relationship to any of the entities that are involved here. He's essentially what is commonly referred to as a robo-signer. He is requested to sign documents on behalf of various entities that are then passed along to unsuspecting corporate trustees who then go about the process of foreclosing homes.
Is this argument that you're making now one that was made to the trial court?
I don't know, Your Honor. I came late to this case. I was not involved in the initial.
So you don't know?
I do not know.
So the next question is, how can you make an argument to us that was not made below or that you don't know was made below?
Well, I wasn't counsel below. I make it in good faith based upon the record I reviewed and submitted to this court.
So would you agree that if the argument was not made below, it was not preserved for purposes of appeal?
Well, I can only go...
Yes or no?
I would have to say that is correct insofar as the record reflects that the arguments were made based upon the evidence that was submitted to this court in the record that you would review. I want to draw the court's attention less to the appointment of successor trustees, and I would point out that Mr. Wilkins, on two different occasions, indicates he represents signing for MERS. But I think the fundamental problem with the foreclosure itself and the issue of good faith is the fact that the beneficiary declaration upon which the trustee would have relied to assure that there was no problem with any of the documents, regardless of where they got them, the assignment of the obligation for foreclosure, was ambiguous. In fact, the beneficiary declaration would essentially address the issue of the appointment of successor trustee and the assignment of the note and deed of trust.
Was that, this argument raised below?
I believe it was. But I don't have, since I wasn't there, I can't speak directly to that. Okay, so but I will say that the
we
evidence...
We look at the responsive pleadings that were filed below in response to motion for summary judgment. Don't see it there. Would you agree then that it wasn't?
I think the only thing I could say to that, Your Honor, is the fact that if the document, this court reviews summary judgments de novo, and if the documents that were submitted, whether the argument was specifically addressed, if the documents themselves raised genuine issues of material fact, particularly in the ambiguity of the beneficiary declaration, this court has an obligation to at least consider that, and whether or not the
Do we have an obligation to consider that if the argument wasn't made, there was no challenge made to the beneficiary declaration below, even though it was in the record?
I think the court on de novo review has to look at the entire record and determine whether or not the trial court erred.
And make up its own, make up arguments for the plaintiff, is what you're saying?
No, I don't think that the court is being asked to do that. But when the parties themselves offer documents which clearly establish that the beneficiary declaration was ambiguous based upon existing case law, the court has to take at least cognizant of that.
And what is the case that you would rely on for that interpretation of how this court proceeds under summary judgment?
Well, I'd look at Lyons and Frias, Your Honor.
And so you're saying that in those cases, even though an argument wasn't made below, the reviewing court took a look at the documents and found them to be lacking?
Well, the court has me in a bit of a bind because I wasn't the attorney of record.
I'm just asking you as a general attorney because, you know, in my experience as an attorney, if you don't raise an argument on summary judgment, you don't get review.
Your Honor,
the court doesn't scour the record to think of arguments that could have been made and doesn't examine the documents to see if they're okay when the argument isn't made that they're not. Would you agree?
I would defer to the court.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Wesley Warrick appearing on behalf of the respondents. I would just like to start by first bringing attention to what the court was inquiring on as to issues that the appellate has raised for the first time on appeal that were not. I was the counsel throughout the litigation below, and the appointment of successor to quality was never raised in the trial court. Neither was the alleged ambiguity of the affidavit of possession. Those were not issues before the trial court. And I believe the trial court issued a very lengthy memorandum of decision granting summary judgment and specifically laid out all the documents he had reviewed and a detailed analysis of how he came to the conclusion that the record before the trial court indisputably showed that Everbank was the holder of the note and entitled to enforce that note, and that Everbank appointed Regional as successor trustee, and Regional was the foreclosure trustee on behalf of and that Regional had obtained the affidavit of possession prior to commencing the non-judicial foreclosure, and that came along with the referral from Everbank. And so there was no conflicting information that Regional received that would allow it to believe that any other entity was claiming a right to enforce the note. And Ms. Connor, in her deposition, specifically testified that she knew Everbank was the entity that she was making payments to and who she was supposed to deal with if she wanted to seek a loan modification or any sort of other assistance. While the trial court didn't go into too much detail, we did make a detailed argument on the waiver, based on the waiver doctrine as well, under 6124.127, based on the fact that Mrs. Connor testified she received notice of the trustee sale, had knowledge or constructive knowledge of defenses, and failed to restrain the sale. And absent the claims enumerated under 6124.127, all other claims were waived by her failure to enjoin the sale. And as to those non-waived claims, the only claim that was preserved on appeal was the CPA claim. And the bulk of the appellant's arguments for their CPA claim is based on MERS-related arguments, specifically the assignment from MERS to EverBank and the appointment of Regional as successor trustee, allegedly based on just the MERS assignment. But as the
appellant claims, it also has preserved the violations of the Deeds of Trust Act, that the trial court was wrong when it decided those claims hadn't been pled. Could you address those claims on their merits?
The violations of the Deed of Trust Act?
Yes, the ones that were raised in the trial court, not the ones that were raised today.
I believe that the 6124.127 does not include a non-waivable claim for a violation of a Deed of Trust Act.
It preserves the claims that the trustee failed to follow the Deeds of Trust Act in proceeding through the foreclosure process.
Yes, and that would be based on the appellant's allegation that the affidavit of possession should not have been relied upon by Regional.
Okay, was that the argument presented at the trial court?
No, at the it
was. What was the argument at the trial court about how the Deeds of Trust Act had been violated by the trustee?
I believe the appellants were arguing that the appointment of Regional was not proper and that Regional then proceeded with the foreclosure not being properly appointed because they were appointed based on a MERS assignment to EverBank and then subsequently appointed by EverBank.
Your response was they were appointed by a holder and therefore they were properly appointed?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I don't believe there were any other allegations against the trustee in particular, and to the extent that the appellant does argue that there were errors in the notice of default, we would argue that any such error would be a non-prejudicial immaterial error, which Washington courts have held in several cases, that unless it's raising to the level of that the trustee is actually not vested, doesn't have the authority to proceed with a sale, non-prejudicial minor typos and notices of default, notice of trust sale are not enough to unwind a sale. Unless you have any other further questions for me, I'll step down.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I believe you reserved 3 minutes. Is that
right? I did, Your Honor. Thank you. As to the claims of waiver, 127 has enumerated, 6124.127 has enumerated a number of non-waivable items. And Judge Leach, you're correct. It includes acts of the trustee in violation of the Deed of Trust Act. The argument I have made to this court is that the beneficiary declaration that was required under RCW 6124.030 subsection 7A was ambiguous.
How?
That it relied upon hearsay. It says or. The language specifically.
So it violates Trujillo?
Pardon me?
It violates the Trujillo case?
Alliance and Trujillo. The fact of the matter is that where you have a situation where you have a declarant, and if I look at the case law, there is an equation. Beneficiary equals owner-holder. beneficiary.
Does equal owner equals holder?
Well, I'm reading the statute. The court has.
Well, the Supreme Court has said the statute is ambiguous, number one. And number two, in Brown, they held that holder is the dispositive position,
the critical one,
not owner.
The critical one, Your Honor, is
for
the
purposes of enforcement under the Deed of Trust Act, it is the holder status that is dispositive. Owner is irrelevant.
But when you use a declaration, the same beneficiary has to be the one making that declaration. And when they make a declaration that says that Everhome is the holder of the obligation, or has made appropriate inquiry of the individuals having knowledge, that introduces hearsay into what it would otherwise be.
Well, that's not the Trujillo-Lyons problem.
No, I'm looking at the declaration itself and the ambiguity that is created when they use the word or in that document.
Well, Trujillo and Lyons didn't just rely on or. It talked about status.
True.
Okay. With respect to the declaration you're describing to me, the status is not in question. It says holder.
The status is in question for this reason, because is the declarant actually the holder, or did they get hearsay from somebody else to support the allegation? If you can't look at a declaration and say to yourself, it's unequivocal, it must be ambiguous because of the way of the language. And I don't believe, Your Honor, that Lyons or Trujillo too looked at the many ways in which this declaration could be made ambiguous. They only had the one before it. Obviously, this court has a different beneficiary declaration. But I would point out that the beneficiary declaration is included in that group of issues that we are requesting this court overturn the summary judgment on. Thank you.
Thank you.